Thanks a lot, Rick. I hope you can hear me all. So today I'll talk about how users control longitudinal exposure of their data. That means how they control who can see their old data and how we can help them to better control it. This is a joint work with my colleagues from MPI SWS, IIES Rishikpur, Purdue University, and my advisor, Krishna Gummadi. Now, today, what I want to start my talk with is that these online social media sites, or OSMs as we call them, are already around for a decade or more, and they're aging. Let's take an example. Now, Twitter was introduced in 2006. By 2009, Twitter has its billionth tweet. 2013, it is getting 500 million tweets per day, and that is already 3 years back. So this is 2016, and more users are using these OSMs and sharing more data. In fact, they will probably continue to use this for the next 10 or 20 years. So one thing to note is that in sites like Twitter, the users are basically both content creators and managers. That is, they have to manage the privacy of their content when they upload it. In fact, sometimes they might have to go back and change the privacy of their old content. And probably they need to do it more the more they stay in this OSMs and accumulate data over years. Now, why would users need or might need to change privacy of their content? Let's take an example again. So in 2009, there is one freshman who uploaded a picture of a wild party night and shared it with everybody on internet. That was the norm at that time, right? Let's look at 2012, she's looking for jobs, and quite understandably, she does not want at least her hiring manager and to-be colleagues to find this picture. This is one of the many examples in which case, due to a change in life, the users might need to change the longitudinal exposure or control who can see their old content, that is, go back and change their privacy. Now, we are definitely not the first one to try to understand this longitudinal exposure in OSMs. Recent studies appearing in WPES and SOUPS already investigated it via user surveys, and they found that the willingness to share content in OSMs actually decreases as the content becomes old. In fact, they decreases further if there is a change in life, that is, you relocate, you got married, got job, etc. In fact, a large-scale study on tweets found that when they looked at tweets posted over 1 week period, even within that particular week, 2.4% of their tweets are already deleted by their users to control exposure. However, they only considered content posted in very recent past, that is within only 1 week. So we find out that there is no investigation so far on how users actually change their privacy preferences to control the longitudinal exposure, and if they do, how effective are the mechanisms that they use. More concretely, our goal in this paper is to better understand how users control longitudinal exposure in OSMs and to help them better control it. To that end, first I'll talk whether users actually at all control their longitudinal exposure or not. And then if they do, how effective are the mechanisms that they use? And finally, I'll discuss how can these mechanisms be improved. Now let's move into the first question. Do users actually change the privacy preferences for their old data? Do they actually go back? To do that, first step is data collection. How do you even collect data on changing privacy preferences, right? We leverage Twitter in our study. Twitter is a really huge OSM, one of the most popular, and specifically suitable for our study because the privacy model is really simple. Either when you share, you can share publicly, accessible to everybody, or you can withdraw it from public by deleting it or making your account private and so on. But basically, it's binary, either in public domain or withdrawn from public domain. Now, based on that, on 30th October 2015, the data for experiment, we collected data from past. By past, I mean 1 day back from this date, 2 days back, 3 days back, to up to 6 years back, long back in the past from this date. How do we do that? because we are collecting data for the past few years each day, what Twitter gives you as a 1% random sample. Note that all this data that we collected in the, from the past is public, was publicly accessible, and that's how we collected it, right? So on this date of experiment, we just checked via Twitter API whether these tweets are still accessible or are they withdrawn from public? Because if they are, that means those privacy preferences for those content have changed. Now, using this data, we first ask this question or try to find the answer to the question. Do users at all change the privacy preferences over time? These, to answer that, let us look at this plot. In the x-axis, we show the time ranging from 1 day back from this date to 6 years back. There's a lot of dates in the x-axis, and their vertical lines signify that the change in time scale. So it's like days versus months versus years, basically. And this red line, the y-axis, shows the percentage of tweets which are inaccessible on those dates. Now, the key point to note is that 5% of one-day-old tweets which are posted in recent past are already inaccessible. Users control exposure for those content. And 28% of content posted 6 years back is withdrawn. The bottom line is users change privacy for increasing amount of old data with time. But how do users do that? I mean, what kind of mechanisms do they use? We find that there are three ways that users can change privacy of old content in Twitter. These are also longitudinal exposure control mechanisms, basically. I'm showing that in this table. So basically, users can selectively withdraw a tweet, or they can withdraw tweets in bulk by deleting their account or making their account private and withdraw all the tweets from the public domain. So how do users use these mechanisms? Again, in this plot, in the x-axis, we show you the time periods from like 1 day's data from 1 day's back, 2 days back to 6 years back. Y-axis, we show, again, the percentage of tweets which are inaccessible due to change in privacy. The red curve here is the curve from the previous plot. Basically, it shows the total amount of data which is inaccessible. And these green, blue, and pink lines actually show you the different mechanisms and how much data is becoming inaccessible due to these. Now, one trend that becomes apparent here is that in recent past, the users control their longitudinal exposure primarily via selective deletion, as shown by this green line, which is very close to red line at the beginning, right? However, if you just look at this trend, when you go to the far past, like 2 years back, then majority of this data is withdrawn. Users change the privacy of their content by deleting their account or making their account private, by bulk withdrawing it. In other words, very different mechanisms are used for content which was posted in far past compared to recent past. Now, note that so far we talked about how much tweet or how much content is getting affected. However, it might be that just a handful of users are doing it, right? It might be widely spread. So we ask, do many users actually change privacy of this content? To answer this, we randomly sampled 100,000 active users from 2009 who posted their tweets in 2009 and looked into 8.9 million of their random old tweets and find that 29% of them are deleted. And then we check what fraction of users change the privacy of this 29%. This is shown in this table, where we are showing the users who, what is a fraction of user who used different mechanisms. And the one key point or key number to note here is that the users who take action that changes privacy of this content by selective withdrawal, account withdrawal, etc., is 34.6%. A significant fraction of users change privacy of their old content. So it is pretty widespread, right? And then we went further. Who are these users? Is there any specific characteristic of them? Specifically, looked into the demographics of these users. And by demographics, I mean gender and location. I'll report the numbers from location here. Now, after inferring gender, the result is put in this table. The first row gives you a baseline. In the random Twitter population, there are 50% of female users. However, when we looked into the users who changed the privacy of their old content, we find out that the fraction of female users are higher in that particular population. On the other hand, the people, the users who did not change the privacy of their old content, the fraction of female users is lower than random baseline. In other words, this points us to the direction that female users are perhaps more likely to change privacy of their old content, probably due to their life changes or for whatever reason. So the first question essentially comes down to, yes, users change privacy of their old content. But then the immediate next question is, how effective are these mechanisms? Because a lot of people are using it for a lot of content, right? In fact, we find that there's a huge limitation of the current exposure control mechanisms, the residual activities. So what are residual activities? They're simply content that others posted by tagging you, right? Here is an example. Here's a tweet that was posted long back in 2009. I don't know whether you can see that. That's in 2009. And it's posted by one of my old drinking buddies. I don't know him again anymore. And of course, it mentioned me. And apparently, if you read the tweet, the summary is, I am an alcoholic, really like to have tequila shots, and want free alcohol. This is bad, right? So note that these conversations from other users remain public even when I moved on. Probably got my degree and probably a PhD. I want to clean up my profile, but still, they will be there forever because others posted them and they are public. So residual activities, as we call them, this conversation, leak information about withdrawn content like your account or your tweets. And anybody online can actually collect and analyze them and have information about your old content which you withdrawn. Essentially, this means that residual activities might leak information and might breach the longitudinal exposure control that you used by withdrawing your account or tweet. To further understand, we ask this question. So what kind of information can we recover from residual activities, right? In this talk, I would focus on one specific type of information, the user interests. Recall that these residual activities, at its very basic, are nothing but tweets. So they contain hashtags, a specific keyword, which earlier studies shown that they represent user interest, at least gives you an idea about it. Now here is an example of one of the co-authors' word cloud of hashtags from his residual activities. If you look closely, you will see that probably he is interested in cybersecurity, probably he has something to do with Purdue, and probably he has something to do with India. So he is basically an assistant professor from Purdue teaching cybersecurity and, of course, originally from India. So that actually leaks his information about him, although none of these things were posted by him. In fact, we looked into a large fraction of users who posted in 2009 and deleted their account or made their account private and see what kind of information is revealed about them. Details are in the paper, but here is some example where in this table we show you some accounts and what hashtags are revealed about them from the residual activities and some high-level topics from those hashtags. Note that they posted hashtags like Iran election, LGBT, same-sex Sunday, which some people might deem sensitive, right? Specifically when you delete your account or you delete your whole tweets. This, we found that residual activities also reveal even more information. Namely, they reveal information about demographics of your accounts, or they even reveal the meaning or content of your specifically deleted tweet, the ones that you regret. The details are in the paper. Please check it out if you're interested. In fact, the bottom line is that residual activities can leak information about withdrawn content and breach longitudinal exposure control. To demonstrate it, we further developed a web app. It is online. Just go ahead and check it out and check what information others leak about you. This is also to raise user awareness about such information. Now that we know that residual activities is a big problem, so what is the solution? How can these mechanisms be improved? A strawman idea is, withdraw all the content, all the residual activities when I withdraw a tweet, right? That seems natural. However, the problem is these residual activities, they are not contributed by me, but others. And think about it. There's an ownership problem that it is very weird. If I delete my profile, that's why others' content got deleted. So it's a difficult problem to deal with residual activities in this way. What people do today in emerging OSMs or like ephemeral OSMs like Snapchat or CyberDust is to use age-based withdrawal that even previous work also mentioned. They simply withdraw all the content after a specified time T. Say after 24 hours, withdraw everything. That actually means that you will withdraw both the original tweet and the residual activities. However, this is not a silver bullet. People are using it. The Snapchat is becoming really, really popular. Even presidential candidates use it. But the problem that we identify, there are two. One, it doesn't facilitate interaction. If you are a presidential candidate and you posted some content, people are really, really interested in it, but it got withdrawn simply because 24 hours are up. That's bad, right? And further, there is no archive of past tweets in this site, so there is no memory that you can look back to. Now, we have solution or have idea to improve the age-based withdrawal to give a solution for the first problem, which is simply inactive. We call it inactivity-based withdrawal, which means you should only automatically withdraw content when it is inactive, when it does not get any like, comment, shares. It is sort of like, you know, gone down under the radar. So in other words, no tweet which receive any interaction should got deleted. In the paper, we show that through simulation, this inactivity-based withdrawal facilitated more interaction like retweets, like comment shares, compared to age-based withdrawal, and specifically do so for more popular tweets, which got a lot of interaction. The details are in the paper again, but note that even then, this is a small step towards a better control because the other problem of not having any archive of past activities, no long-term memory is not solved. So, in fact, we have some ideas how to solve it. We're working on it. If you're interested, come and talk to me after this talk, please. To summarize, we saw this. We analyzed the longitudinal exposure control in the OSMs and see a lot of people is controlling exposure for a lot of content. And we are the first study to analyze information leakage by residual activities and argue that due to this information leakage, the longitudinal exposure control mechanisms today are breached by residual activities. That is bad news. However, we pointed out a step forward about inactivity-based withdrawal to stop information leakage and also to facilitate interaction, which is sort of an improvement over age-based withdrawal, but still not a silver bullet. And it definitely emphasizes the need to have more research in this direction. I would like to thank you for your time. And please check out our app if you find this interesting. Thank you.
Hi, Emily Rader, Michigan State University. So I'm wondering if you've given any thought to other reasons why accounts may be deleted. So on the Twitter support pages, they say there are circumstances under which they will remove inactive accounts, and also family members sometimes will request that accounts of deceased family members will be deleted. So I wonder how much that might have affected your results.
That's a great question. So for inactive accounts, Twitter actually say that they might or might not delete the inactive accounts. In fact, we kept an account open for like 6 months without an activity and it wasn't deleted, right? I mean, we haven't even logged in just for the experimental sake. So we believe that the fraction will be really small and that is understandable because Twitter want more users to be in this site. For the diseased family members, it is a new thing and we don't know. We don't have an idea that how much is the fraction, but I would assume that it will be low because then you have to make a petition to Twitter telling that she's diseased, delete the account. And this might be too high bar for the second of the kin. So that is my guess on that for the second part.
Go ahead. My name is Moses Namara from the University of Maryland. Do you mind going a slide back, the last slide for that?
Yeah, this one?
Yeah. So I wanted to ask, from the residual activities, how conclusive is it easy to make? How easy is it to get back the original information? Because I feel like if I delete the original content and there's something residual, it's very hard to kind of know exactly what I was talking about. You can know the context, but you may not know exactly what I was trying to.
Yes, so That's a good point, because that we actually spent 2 pages in the paper for that. You can actually infer more information that you originally posted. I'll give you one example. So some user actually posted that, "I love roses, thank you." And then people actually replied to that, so it become residual activities, is that, "Oh, so you don't go in London, you don't get roses for your birthday, happy birthday." So this birthday information was not at all in the original tweet, but when people converse, they actually reveal more information. So we sort of like show that you got the whole context, the whole meaning of the tweet from these gestural activities, in certain circumstances, of course.
Florian Schaub from Carnegie Mellon. It's a really interesting study. What I'm also wondering about is the people who delete their accounts, right? I would be surprised if you have analysis on this, but it would be interesting to know whether they actually abandon the service. Like, do they leave Twitter when they delete the account, or do they reset and, you know, basically create a new identity? It would be an interesting question.
That will be a fantastic future study. Actually, I know I have found some accounts which actually started like telling that, you know, the same name, tell that this is my new Twitter account. The other one is deleted. But we haven't really, this more manual study. I just did it for fun. Let's put it that way. But it will be very interesting to see as a more systematic, statistically significant study. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay. I was just wondering the difference between the rate at which men and women are deleting accounts or setting their accounts private could be the result of harassment as opposed to general privacy adoption. And I don't know if you've got any way of detecting that, but when I saw that, those numbers, that is immediately what came to mind.
That is quite possible that due to abuse or cyberbullying, that is at the effective field. And it is a bit different from our study to the point that ultimately what they did that end up changing privacy of their content. So we are mainly looking at the effect of it, but the cause, that's an excellent research question, and probably this might actually provide basis for such research that whoever female users who are changing their privacy of their content.
All right, and we're out of time for questions, so.
That's fine.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.